You are listening to WDOT Port Washington. The program you are listening to may contain language or material that could be considered offensive. The views expressed are those of the DJ and not necessarily those of WDOT or other WDOT station members. We therefore advise you to carefully consider whether you or your children should listen. Hello and welcome back to another special episode of the Epic Entertainment Roundup. I hope you all had an amazing weekend and are getting ready to watch the highly anticipated Super Bowl. Today, we will be talking to Daryl T. Joe, a swing in the show Spamalot on Broadway in New York. I went to see him a few weeks ago, and it was amazing. I was laughing the whole entire time. I definitely recommend it. But before we speak to him, a quick PSA. Since 1944, Smokey the Bear has instructed Americans that only you can prevent forest fires. Smokey is an icon. 96% of U.S. adults recognize him, and 70% are able to recall his message without prompting. Most importantly, the average number of acres lost annually to wildfire has decreased from 22 million in 1944 to an average of 6.7 million today. To celebrate Smokey's 70th birthday, the Ad Council, the U.S. Forest Service, and the National Association of State Foresters announced a new set of television, radio, print outdoor, and digital public service advertisements. Created by FCB West, the ad agency that has created work for the campaign since its 1944 launch, 2014's PSAs continue the Smokey Bear Hug theme. In these ads, Smokey hugs people to thank them for taking the proper actions to prevent wildfires. In return, outdoor-loving individuals across the nation are shown reciprocating with a birthday bear hug in honor of his 70 years of service. Smokey won't be retiring anytime soon. While he is the star of the longest-running PSA campaign in the U.S. history and has accomplished so much, he still has more to do. Even today, people cause nearly 90% of wildfires nationwide, mainly by leaving campfires unattended, burning debris on windy days, impromptu discarding smoking materials or BBQ coals, or operating equipment without spark arresters. So, make sure you prevent fires. Now, without further ado, please welcome to the show, Daryl T. Joe. Hi, thanks so much for coming on the show. How are you today?
Hi, good morning. I'm well.
Could you tell me a little about yourself?
Yeah, of course. So hi, my name is Daryl Joe. I am originally from Houston, Texas, but I have lived here in New York for the last 13 years. And I am a musical theater artist extraordinaire.
When did you start performing? Like, when did you start performing on musicals?
Oh, that's actually funny. So I started, this is a little funny, I started dancing at age 9, I think fourth grade, at my church. My church had this little praise dance team, and I remember watching it and being like, God, I want to be up on that stage. So I started doing that. And then I actually took a long hiatus from theater and dance up until like my sophomore year of high school. I was in the marching band, and the theater teacher needed some guys to be in Guys and Dolls. And I was like, I'll try it. Sure, and then I fell in love and got the theater bug, and here we are.
Mm-hmm. I read on your bio that you played French horn throughout your high school, and that you self-taught yourself some instruments.
That's on my bio. What bio did you read?
Oh.
I don't remember that.
Oh.
But it's true. You're right. You mean my the Broadway playbill, or?
You had your website.
Oh, my website. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so as I was saying, I stopped dancing because I fell in love with music and I joined the band. I think I was like in sixth grade. And yes, I was the French horn player. And I mean, I have to be modest, but I was really good at it. And I thought that I was going to do that professionally. So it was kind of a surprise to me when theater bit me with mm-hmm. that little audition I had in for Guys and Dolls. And yeah, I guess I always knew I was going to be in something artsy and creative, but I didn't know the venue, I mean the avenue that I would take.
Mm-hmm. Did you did you round up going to school for theater?
Yeah, I let's see. I went, so I didn't have a whole lot of experience, as I said, because I just did that one show in high school. This is proof that, like, you can do anything you set your mind to. So, yeah, I applied to, like, NYU and Marymount and all the, like, the big New York musical theater schools, because that's all I knew existed. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get into them because, you know, I didn't have any experience. Mm-hmm. But I went to, where did I go? I went to a school in Texas. I went to UT Austin for 1 year, and they didn't really have a musical theater program. So I transferred to Sam Houston State University in Texas and studied musical theater there. Mm-hmm. And I think college is all about making the experience your own. I was always out taking other classes outside of college just to continue to learn as much as I can. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
How did you get intertwined with Spamalot? How did you, like, start that audition process?
Ah, Spamalot. And you saw Spamalot, right?
I did. I loved it. It was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, that's an interesting... Let's see. Last year, 2023... I was actually having kind of a hard year. I don't know if you know this, but I also do taxes as a side hustle.
Oh.
Yeah. And so last year was my first year to try to do it independently, like kind of a small business and create my own clients. I worked for H&R Block before that. Mm-hmm. But this past year I was like, I'm going to do it independently. And tax season is the same time as busy audition season. Aww. So it was a really overwhelming spring. Mm-hmm. And I was doing all of that and Spamalot, the casting team emailed me or reached out to my agent back in April or May, asking if I was available and interested for the Kennedy Center production. Mm. And I was like, of course I am. And they asked me to send in a tape. And I sent in a little tape of me singing and tap dancing. And then I never heard anything. And I was like, oh, well, that would have been cool. I forget about it. And then later, like August, mm-hmm. they reach out again. And they're like, the production is coming to Broadway. And they were looking for some additional roles to add on to the Kennedy Center cast, and they needed some swings and understudies. So I went to that audition in person this time, and of the 13 years that I lived in New York, it was one of the silliest auditions I've ever done. It was just like, we tap danced a little bit, we did a little bit of Lancelot, we sang, we read songs, but it was all about who is silly. Mm-hmm. Who is bringing more than just doing the steps, just singing the notes. Like, they really wanted to see personality, and I just remember being an idiot in the room and making everybody laugh. And here we are today. Like, it really just goes to show, like, just being yourself and not trying to be what somebody thinks they should be in a room is what really matters.
So you're you're a swing on Spamalot, right?
I am a swing, and the hardest job on Broadway.
So what is that? What does it mean to be a swing?
So for those who don't know, a swing is an offstage role. It's my particular job is to cover all of the men in the ensemble. So I have five guys in the ensemble, and I have to know all of their where they stand in each number, like with notes they sing in each number, what lines they may have. I have to know five guys' entire show. And I have to be able to jump in at a moment's notice and just fill in the holes and help. A job of the swing is to help the show to continue to run smoothly if someone's out.
Has that ever been, like, stressful for you?
Yes! I was going to ask if you saw this on my Instagram story, but I actually jumped into the show mid-show for the first time last night.
Yes, I saw that.
So, a lot of being a swing is, sitting around and waiting. And up until last night, I hadn't been in the show for a month, probably since you saw me in the show. So I had gotten to this point where I was just coming to the theater and watching Hulu or watching Netflix, and laying on a couch. And I mean, generally, we try to review our notes and stuff as much as we can. We watch backstage, we watch from the audience, but it had been so long that I was just getting comfortable and, doing other things. So last night, my dance captain comes up to me while I'm literally eating a Kit Kat. It was like, "Hey, just so you know, so and so just rolled their ankle off stage. They need you to get in the costume right now." And I was like, "Oh," and I hadn't been looking at my notes in a minute, and I was stretching or warming up in any way, but that's the excitement of being a swing. So I grabbed my notes, reviewed the number I was about to do really quickly, and it went well. I didn't kill anybody. And I had a friend actually in the audience see me, so I thought that was really cool that he was coming to the show. I was like, "Oh, I'm sad you're not on." And then I was
Oh, that's cool. So what was it like the first time you stepped onto that stage in New York, seeing all of the people in the crowd on a Broadway stage?
Oh, you mean like my debut? Oh my God. That's another crazy story. My mom was, it was the week of Thanksgiving, which in the land of Spamalot was a very busy week. We had a lot of rehearsals. We had just finished previews. We had just opened the show, and we were gearing up for the Thanksgiving parade. I don't know if you saw that. So we had a bunch of rehearsals and stuff. And my mom was like, "I want to come to New York." She lives in Texas. And I was like, "I don't think it's a good week to come. I'm going to be very busy. You won't see me, and I probably won't go on. It's still so early." And she's like, "I'm coming anyway." I was like, "Fine." So there was one, she was like, "The only thing I want to do this week is go to this restaurant." So I squeezed in a moment for us to go to this restaurant between a rehearsal and my call for the show. And we sit down, and then I get a call from my stage manager. "We need you to go on for a track tonight." And I was like, "Oh, we have to leave. We can't eat this food that you wanted." And so she was like, "I told you, I knew it. I told you." So it was fun. We jumped in a cab and we ran downtown for me to get ready for the show. Now, to answer your question, yes, I posted on my story, "Hey, everybody, I'm making my debut." And a bunch of my friends ran to the theater, got last minute tickets. And it was so exhilarating. I can't even remember what happened. It all happened so quickly. It was a blur. But what I do really remember is the bows and seeing. I actually made eye contact with a bunch of my friends that were in the audience screaming. And then the cast, turned to me and started applauding me and pushed me forward to take my own personal
Oh,
bow.
wow.
And everyone was screaming. And then James Monroe Iglehart, you've seen the show, that there's like a big sing-along at the end. He was like, "Everybody, help me congratulate Daryl on his Broadway debut and sing this song." And so the whole audience screamed for me. It was an amazing feeling that I'll never forget. I'm so grateful for
So
it.
what's been your favorite part of actually being in Spamalot?
Oh, like favorite part of the show?
Just anything, being part of the team, being in the show, out of the show.
Oh, that's an interesting question. I might have more than one answer. The favorite part of being in the show, I think, is so silly. I love the scene when Sir Bors comes onto the stage and tries to defeat the killer rabbit, and his head gets bitten off. I think that is so fun to play. It's this cool little mechanism where the head pops off of the costume. That's my favorite part, to be in the show. But the favorite thing about the whole process, it sounds It sounds vain. It sounds a little vain, but it's really cool to be a part of a Broadway show and be in New York City. I don't know. It just feels like I feel like a celebrity in a weird way. I know that I'm not. But it's just like, I don't know, people just have these stars in their eyes when they meet you, and it just feels so great to finally like be a part of something that is so well respected by the community. Mm-hmm. It's something I've always wanted to be a part of. Mm-hmm. It's hard to explain, but yeah, a legacy is being a Broadway show in New York, and it's kind of surreal, but yeah, I just like being able to say that I'm on Broadway. Is that silly? And like, I'm getting to do what I've said I wanted to do my entire life for a living now. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. So yeah, keep going for your dreams if that's what you want to do, because it's a hard to explain feeling, but it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. What's been your, like, what was your favorite, what's your favorite song to sing in the show?
Favorite song to sing in the show. I am a baritone, bass baritone type of singer. And I've always liked like a legit ballad over like pop. That's the world that I live in. Mm-hmm. So my favorite song in the show is I'm sure nobody else would agree with me, but it's King Arthur sings a ballad called All Alone towards the end of Act Two. And it's this funny scene where he's saying that he's all alone and nobody's there to encourage him to get through. And Patsy's standing right next to him like, hello, I'm here.
Yeah.
And then the ensemble comes out and joins him saying that he's all alone, but they're all there too. And it's just this funny ballad where everyone is there, but we're all alone. And I like that song. It's beautiful. The chords are nice and it's, you know, legit stuff. Mm. It's my favorite.
Is it like surreal for you that you're in such an iconic show with such iconic songs?
Yeah, it's funny. So Monty Python, obviously this musical is based on Monty Python's Holy Grail, which I had, you know, I've been familiar with it, but honestly, getting cast in the show was the first time I sat down and watched it. And it's like British humor is a different kind of humor.
Yes, definitely.
But it's fun to be a part. I always kind of compare it to like Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's that kind of show that has this like a built-in audience. Mm-hmm. Where people come who are diehard fans. And a lot of times we'll have audience members sometimes shout out the line before the actor says it. For instance, like, we are the knights who say, and then the people in the audience will scream out, me. And it's so funny to be a part of a show that just like people know what it is. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to work too hard to get them on board. Mm-hmm. They come and they're already like, I'm here for this ride, let's go. So that's fun. Like, we never have to worry about like, is this audience going to be dead? Is this audience going to get it? Are they going to care? Like, they're always there with us and always there to have a good time. So that's fun.
And when I was sitting at the show, I saw like one of the B101, I believe, someone got pulled up to the stage. Do you guys know how that goes? Or like if the person's going to react well or they're just going to cry?
Yeah. I don't know if this is a secret, but we definitely have a plan for more than one seat. Mm. They're generally in the same like general vicinity. Because, you know, lighting and whatnot and accessibility for the actors to get down to that seat. But, yeah, they don't want it to necessarily be the same seat every night because they don't want it to turn into people, like, trying specifically to buy that seat. They want it to still be a surprise. Mm-hmm. So there are, like, four or five seats that they rotate. And at the beginning of each show, they'll say, tonight, they'll tell us, tonight the seat is going to be, for example, A101. Mm. And then sometimes at intermission, they'll be like, we've decided to change the seats to B101. And it'll be for a number of reasons, like that person is like maybe in a wheelchair and can't, won't be able to come up on the stage, or this person is looks really wasted and we don't want to bring them up on the stage. So they kind of like vet to make sure that it's somebody that will be fun and play along.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a couple seats, but I'm not going to tell you which ones.
If something does go wrong on stage in that scene, do you guys have like a backup plan of just how to like keep going?
You know, we've had people like not play along in the way that they should, but there's not really a plan besides like, you know, relying on the brilliant improv skills of our excellent cast, like James and who else talks in that scene? Whoever's playing Sir Rob, like there, everyone is pretty good at improv and just sort of like going with the flow and making it work. But yeah, you never can tell exactly how the audience member is going to react, but there's not really like a script change. It's just sort of like use your best judgment and go with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's improv skills.
Mm. Have you learned a lot from your time in the show? About the Broadway industry, about how a show works?
I have learned so much. A lot about myself, a lot about patience, especially being a swing. I've learned how to, like, a big thing about being a swing is learning how to let go of the ego. Because as a swing, there's always going to be this strive to be perfect, but you will never get there. That's one thing, like, perfection does not exist for any role in the show. So I'm learning to be easier on myself. I'm learning to move on from mistakes, whereas I used to be more of a perfectionist and sort of dwell on things and beat myself up. It's really important to just, like, you know, theater is organic, and that's live theater. Like, things happen, and you keep going, and you move on, and that's something I've learned. I'm also learning just, like, how much hard work Broadway is. Like, eight shows a week, indefinitely, and then you add on. We have understudy rehearsal every week. There's press events. There's fun interviews, like today. There's always stuff that's going on. And I just realized, like, yeah, Broadway's hard work. And it's not just a walk in the park. And everybody that, like, works their butt off to get here, like, is going to work, because it's going to continue to work hard, because that's the job. So yeah, I've learned a lot about, you know, grounding myself, I guess is the best thing to say.
Mm-hmm. And
are you at school right now? I hear voices.
Yeah. Do you have any like advice for people who want to become actors?
Yeah. Let's see. And you want to become an actor, right?
I thought about it for a while, but then I thought about, like, what would be, like, the actual chances of me, like, getting to Broadway?
Well, I know this is my interview, but can I ask you, are you in a theater program at school?
Yeah, I'm in a theater program at school. I'm in the Schreiber Theater Company, and we're currently in our production of Footloose that is being performed on March 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
Nice. We'll see if I can make it.
Yeah, I'd love it.
Well, that's I asked because I think step one is to get, just throw yourself into theater as early as you can. Like if there's like community theater or like theater at your high school or middle school, like get involved, because the more knowledge you absorb, the more it'll benefit you in the long run. I don't like to like have regrets, but I do wish that I, you know, started sooner. Like, who knows where we could be now, but you know, everybody's journey is their own, but I would love to see more people like get involved at an early age. That's step one. Two, I'll say I won't necessarily plug you must go to college for theater. That's a big subject. I think there's benefits and there's disadvantages, both ends of the spectrum. I think do what's best for you in that regard. But if you do choose to go to college, make sure it's a program that's right for you, not just a program that you hear that everybody goes to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, like really interview or check out campuses and like ask questions and make sure it would be a good fit for you. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing is to train, whether that's on your own, taking classes, or in a university. Mm-hmm. Train in dance, train in acting, train in voice. Mm-hmm. Even if you just want to be a straight actor, like have experience in all of those art forms, because you never know. You want to have as much on your resume that will set you apart from others. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I'll say, authenticity, authenticity, authenticity. Figure out what you bring to the table and only you bring. Mm-hmm. That is a big one. What makes you different? Because this business is growing more and more and more. There's gazillions of people at these auditions these days. you want to be able to walk into a room and like, this is what I offer that no one else can. Mm-hmm. So find your quirks, find your niche, and go with it. Sell it. Don't try to fit into a box and be what you think they want you to be. Mm-hmm. My dad has taught me that all my life. Mm-hmm. He's not an actor, but he's always like, be you. Don't be anybody else. So that's my advice.
Yeah.
I hope that all makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And just the thing I want to end on today is the one of the most famous songs from Spamma, you know, Always Look on the Bright Side of Life.
Oh, yeah.
Do you believe in that? Always look on the bright side of life?
Oh, what a question. How do I feel about that lyric? I think, yes, it's kind of reminds me of the saying, you know, look at your glasses half full versus half empty. I actually love that message. If you like hang out with me in person ever, hopefully someday.
Yes.
I have, a lot of people tell me I have like this really like bright energy, and people have always told me my whole life, you're always happy. And that's not necessarily true, but I think I do give off that energy. I mean, I'm human. I have bad days like everybody else. But I do try to live my life being grateful that I'm here, being grateful for the things I have, and always, anytime something, you know, bad or negative happens, I do try to like connect with, well, at least this didn't happen, at least that didn't happen. I do try to find a positive in everything, because life is short, and you know, you want to have the best life you can, and that is not going to happen by dwelling on negative. And I think it gets you farther ahead of life. Mm. So yeah, I do believe in that. Doesn't mean don't acknowledge your feelings. Mm. I mean, we all have bad days, but don't dwell on them is what I would say.
Mm. Well, Darryl, yeah. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
And I can't wait to listen to your work.
Of course. And as always, this has been your host, Gabriel, saying until next time, always look on the bright side of life. Thank you so much.